everybody. It's Not Another True Crime Podcast. I'm Sarah Levine.
And I'm Danny Murphy. You know, we're your partners in wine, crime, and time. And we like to go back in time for a lot of these cases now.
We sure do. And we will continue doing that. But first, there's a brief update on the Madeleine McCann thing. So basically, all we know right now is that the girl, Julia, who believes she's Madeleine McCann, has submitted her DNA for testing. And I read this in the New York Post. Apparently, what they're going to do is they're first going to do like a sort of 23andMe type situation to see if she's even like British.
Wow.
And if so, then I think they're going to contact the Portugal like authorities to like, because I don't think they're immediately testing her DNA like against the McCanns.
I guess that's to like kind of not get their hopes up extra, or is it just like a new, maybe a protocol, or?
I have no idea. I mean, it's, I'm kind of like, well, why not just test it? Because I feel like that's less tests, but who knows?
Because then it's like, okay, she's British. Next step. Like why? It's now becoming like so much more drawn out.
I agree. I also am like, how does that work?
I don't understand any of that, but I'm going to be curious for the entire step. So I guess they have us hooked.
Yes, they have us hooked.
It's almost like they're drawing it out so they get more, like, I'm like, why are you extending this case that's been extended for decades? Like,
I know, but maybe we'll have updates on that soon. I'm also like, well, let's say you're like, my parents are British, but like, maybe my grandparents aren't, or like, whatever. Like, how is that going to show up in DNA? I don't even know.
That's true. I'm just so very Irish that I don't really, it just kind of throws a potato at me whenever I do any of that testing.
I love that. But that's that on that. So we'll have to see what happens there.
Mm.
But otherwise, we're going to continue to go back in time. Danny, you found this case. How did you find it?
I found this case because I was looking on, I think it was like a retweeted tweet from Smithsonian Magazine, where we're getting so much stuff from. Classic. And it was about the woman who, spoiler alert, was the first photographed execution via electric chair, which is very morbid. But
seriously,
but I was kind of like, what does that mean? Like, how did that even occur? What led to there? You know what I mean? So then I started reading and the article that it connected to, and it was like, for more on, quote, Ruthless Ruth. And I was like, all right, Sarah, this is our new episode.
I mean, we do love a little alliteration. Is it alliteration or is it a rhyme? It's not really a rhyme.
Oh, it's alliteration. Yeah. Oh, it's a double. Yeah. I don't know if there's a different type of word for that. I also like, Sarah, you're in LA. How's your energy levels over there?
It's so gloomy. Like it's raining.
It's disgusting here.
I was like, oh, I'll be at the beach every day. No.
Mm-mm. No. And also I like lost my voice on Sunday. It's almost back. So sorry if it goes in and out. It's not your Wi-Fi. It's me. And that's just my, and if you're like listening to this while you're commuting, the podcast didn't go out. It's just, you know, I hope I'll be back to basics next week.
What did you do over the weekend that made you lose your voice?
Fall asleep at 10 p.m. Like I woke up and it was just gone. And I was like, what's happening? I know.
That's crazy. I was like, oh, were you like screaming at a concert?
Nope. I did that. And I also was walking my mom's Chihuahua and I tripped. So I like hurt my ankle and I had no voice. I was like, I feel like I went to Vegas, but all I did was go to bed.
Wow. That's brutal.
Morale is low, but the story is juicy. So let's get into it. So just like as the top of it, Ruth was born on 125th Street in Manhattan in 1895. So back, back, back.
Yes, way back.
She was the daughter of a working class Scandinavian family. And kind of just, you know, they were working hard, living their sort of just like American dream life, trying to hustle, trying to get to it. She was a smart girl, but articles that I was reading of the time were just kind of like, everyone was kind of like, oh, you're smart, find a husband, which.
Relatable, honestly, still happens today.
I was going to say still very much present time and place for that. And she did find herself a man. So Mary, her real name was Mary Ruth Brown, met her husband, Albert Snyder, in 1915 in NYC. She was 20 at the time, and he was 33.
Interesting. They side-eye a bit.
Back then, I don't know. I don't even know what gets side-eyed in the 1910s.
I mean, I feel like she was probably, like at 20, they were like, oh, you're old. Like, yeah, she probably.
Like, girl, you're on your last leg.
Seriously. And they're like, we got to marry you off quick.
They met at work too, but even though they worked together, they did not have a lot in common.
Okay. Good foundation to build a marriage on.
No, I think it's like really, 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 really good. They almost had like literally nothing in common. She went by Ruth, like we were saying, but she usually, her close friends called her Tommy.
What?
No, I was equally confused. So I had to go to another article that unpacked the name, why her nickname was Tommy. And it was because she was a good sport, like one of the guys.
Like she was a tomboy?
I guess so. Or like, oh, you're not a Ruth, you're a Tommy. Like they're just like, oh, you're a man.
That is a choice.
A choice, yeah. No deep clue why.
But I feel like when people do that, they're like, oh, you don't look like a Rachel. You look like a Lauren or something like that, but not like a Tommy.
A Tommy. Even though now I'm kind of like loving that name. Like, oh, hey, Tom. Like, I feel like she like could pull it off.
She could do it.
She was able to pull off that name better than other things she tried to pull off.
For real.
So the kind of like dichotomy of them, like she was described as like vivacious and gregarious, and like she loved hosting parties, loved to have everybody over. Albert, on the other hand, was very reserved and a homebody. He apparently just liked to like be in like the garage working on projects, not talking to anyone.
Relatable.
So opposites attract. They're together. So
I know this. It's very odd couple. I'm still wondering like why they got married.
Good question. I guess the answer is the 1910s.
Right? They had nothing in common and they didn't like each other at all.
Sarah, I'm sure we all know some people.
That's true. You're right.
I'm like, they're married? What? Yeah.
That endures today.
Despite all this, like I said, they got married and had a nice regular house in like the between Queens and Long Island.
Shouts out.
So your spot after jumping around Brooklyn for a
little
bit.
That's like my hometown, pretty much.
Wait. Okay, so you might have to look into some addresses here.
I know. I actually was Googling like my town plus like murders. And I only, because after we've done so many in your hometown.
I know.
All right, let's see what Great Neck has to offer. There was one in like the 2000s. And I was like, I think that's a little bit recent to jump in. Yeah, but I didn't find any like interesting historical crimes yet.
I wonder if. Do you know when Great Neck was founded as like a place with a name? I wonder if you have to Google.
Oh, good call. Yeah, you know? I should find out where these people's house in Queens was.
Yeah. Cause this was like, cause they were like in Queens, Long Island. And I was like, well, I guess that makes sense. But then it was kind of more central or like more not like a story.
Yeah.
And then in 1918, she gave birth to their only child, Lorraine. Lovely quiche Lorraine. Albert at this time, he was really moving on up in being an art editor for Motor Boating Magazine, which...
Love that.
I guess, like, there's so many niche blogs and websites now. Of course there was a Motor Boating Magazine. And he made $100 a week, which I feel is...
Well, also, apparently, Motor Boating Magazine was, like, part of Hearst back then. So, like, shouts the fuck out to them.
I mean, they do have enthusiasts.
Hitting the big time.
Hitting the big old papers.
Seriously.
And people... This, I don't know how... Because, like, this next line really does give me, like, murder documentary openings when everyone's like, oh, they were so happy. Because people were like, someone said Ruth achieved everything that most women dreamed of.
I mean, I guess that's pretty, like, low. Like, dream bigger, ladies, you know? She had a husband and a daughter. Like, okay,
that's what they were like, a husband, a daughter, a car, and a house.
I guess. Yeah. All right. It's not that. You know. It's not that serious. I don't know. Yeah.
But she did seriously have some fun in 1925. When?
She did.
She found herself having a little affair that now we all remember.
What is that, like a walk to remember?
Oh my God. Don't make me play Only Hope. You all are lucky that my voice hurts or else I would be singing that song for 3 minutes right now. Oh my God, Mandy Moore. But the affair was not with Mandy Moore. It was with Henry Judd Gray, who was also married.
Okay, now we're talking. Now we're talking about what every woman dreams of. A husband, a lover on the side, a house in Queens.
Get yourself a lover. Who was a corset salesman. Discount.
I mean, hey, discount. And he also, you know, he knows some things.
Oh, he knows how to hook on hook. Yes.
Exactly.
And he lived in suburban New Jersey. So this is long distance.
Wow. I honestly respect. I didn't, even when I was dating, and I live in Queens, I was just like a 3 mile radius.
Oh, yeah. You're like, I'm not going to get my steps in for love, which probably should be a new reality show.
I'm not crossing state lines. That I had accidentally matched with like too many Jersey people while they were in Manhattan. And I was like,
oh,
no.
People do that where they put in their thing like Midtown usually. And I'm like, that means
you usually. That's so, it's like those girls were like LA pin, NYC pin, but you're like Midtown usually.
Barcelona. And I'm like, you went to Barcelona 10 years ago. What's happening here? Yeah.
Right. That's so, that's nuts. Like, oh, I'm not going to like go on a date in your office. So like,
no,
don't I mean,
unless you work at like a Google where the food is free.
It's facts.
And the cafeteria is nice. Facts. Then, yeah. And Henry got her down bad. Just say, and like, you know, you're head over heels when right after getting it on with your affair man, you immediately start planning the murder of your husband.
She was stigmatized.
She literally was like, oh, I am moving to Jersey. She's like, you know what? This is my new life.
Oh my God.
Let's make something happen here.
I read that they had like weird nicknames. Like he called her Momsy and I forget what she called him, but it was just very fucking weird.
I could vomit. Momsy.
She loves, I mean, this lady loved a weird nickname. So
that's true. Tommy.
Yeah.
She apparently tried to float this by her male, her like her affair lover a few times. And he was not that into it at first. He kind of was like, wait, what?
Yeah, he was like, why would I commit murder?
She's like, oh my God, this nice is so nice. He's like, yeah. And she's like, you know what'd be even better? We murder my husband? I'm just putting out feelers for date night. Yeah.
And he's like, what? And she's like, what?
And well, and like, of course, there's layers to it because like we started off saying, everyone was like, oh, she has the best life. Everybody's so happy. There are some reports that say, some people saying that she was annoyed because her husband was hung up on his ex-fiance who died.
Still not a reason to murder.
Not a reason. Now there's layers. And also, babe, unless you're the Queen's Long Island medium, she's not competition.
I know. There's always like, if you go on Am I the Asshole, there's always a Reddit post like that of someone who's really? Like AITA for like, yeah, for like getting mad at my husband for putting up a picture of his late wife or something. And they always get completely flamed in the comments.
Good, I like, hope so. I'm like, yeah. Wait.
Of like, stop trying to compete with a dead person. Like you're messed up.
Yeah. Oy, oy, oy. So, and it's funny you bring up that instance because one of the main things that annoyed her is that he did put up a photo of his late fiance on the wall.
I'm going to go with, he's not the asshole for that.
Okay. And another layer, Sarah, he named their boat after her.
But was that like before she died? I mean,
I think it was after.
It's a boat.
It's about, he works for motorboating. Those
and boats are always like named, I mean, not always, but like boats are typically like women.
Wait, I think I read something that like, they're like, it's bad luck if they're not or something. I have no clue.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't read that. I was told that on a boat once and it was by the old ship captain who was driving it. And I'm not, it's like in an Uber. I'm agreeing with everything he says until I get to land.
That's so funny. I feel like maybe it's bad luck to name a boat after a living person. Like,
oh,
I'm just completely making that up. But
okay, that works. I would just be happy to have a boat.
I mean, obviously, I wouldn't care what it's named.
Yeah. And he also, okay, this is when it could get into a little murkier territory because he did apparently always say that his late fiance was the finest woman he ever met.
I mean,
which not the best thing
you
want
to
hear.
You don't say that to your wife.
I know.
That's not and nice.
She was dead for over a decade. So I feel like he just needed to go to therapy. Or also just find out a way to mourn the loss in not a way that affects his current life.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Also on top of this too, Albert got really tired very quickly about how young.
What, at the ripe old age of 33, this man's tired? Okay, I mean, joke I make, so I stand by that.
Yeah, so he was a little too young and giddy. And she was like, you know, Jesse Gouchard, my more serious fiancé, was much more better than you. And she died right before them.
Damn.
And so, okay, so I mean, like, they clearly aren't a match. And also what gets hard, there wasn't a ton of information on this, but some people were inferring, and it could potentially be very, very true. And adding a layer to this is that Albert was also emotionally and physically abusive, going so far as to blame Ruth, like, oh, you didn't give us a son, which, fuck you, dude. Fuck.
That's giving Henry VIII. Come on, man.
Literally, like, you're not an heir of anything.
Sir, also, what? It's his, I mean, now we know, it's his fault. The man gives the X or the Y chromosome.
That's true. And he also was like, why isn't the house clean? And the people were even saying he was equally like rude and potentially even abusive to their daughter too. So a lot of layers that could be going on. Ruth's mom even moved in with them for a little bit. And she was like, get a divorce, girl. You guys aren't a good match. Like, she's like, what are you doing here? But she chose not to get a divorce.
She did something else. Apparently, she persuaded Albert, or I read that she tricked him, to get life insurance for himself. And I mean, this is, of course, where it starts. So what she did was, she
another then, date night. She's like, hey, you know what'd be really cool? Let's get life insurance.
Right? No reason at all. She then took this to an insurance agent who later was fired and sent to prison for forgery. So good dude.
Shout out. You know, she found him in New Jersey.
Wait, he was from New Jersey?
No, I'm just assuming.
Oh, yeah, probably.
I know my people.
True. So she took out what's called a double indemnity policy, which meant that he like signed a $48,000 policy that paid out double, I think, if he died by accident or an unexpected act of violence. So first of all, I'm like, why does that exist? That just seems like the murder policy. Like what would you possibly do that you're like, oh, I'm so worried that they're going to die by an unexpected act of violence that let me just sign a policy that pays out double for that. Like, that's sketch. But it also did inspire a book that later became a movie called Double Indemnity.
Wait, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that was this. Well, we'll get into it. But this was, there were lots of big producers and big names at the trial.
Media Sensation.
Media Sensation.
That should just be the name of our podcast.
Media Sensation.
I kind of love that. Okay, let's spin off.
I love that. And then we have a lot to live up to, though.
True.
But yeah, so obviously this was super suspicious. So on March 20th, 1927, Ruth and Judd joined forces to carry out this murder. And this is it's so graphic. And also this is just how like poorly planned I feel like this is.
Yes.
So what they first did was they like beat him over the head with a weight. And then they strangled him with a wire and also stuffed his nose with chloroform rags. So like truly just
a lot.
Could not choose one method and just did everything, which is horrible.
Oh, so much. And so just like brutally painful to just be brutally painful.
Yes. And then what they tried to do was they staged his death to make it a burglary, but they did such a bad job.
So bad. This is why there are Oscars for like set design and stuff, because they were so bad.
So bad. So Ruth told the police that, this is a quote, two gigantic Italians broke in.
Okay.
Which is hilarious. I was Googling this and I was like, that's oddly specific. Anti-Italian sentiment was not at its peak at this point, but in the 1920s, it was still like high, like Congress had passed restrictions on Italian immigration. So it was like, it was a thing.
Notable in the air.
Yes. Two giant Italians. Okay. So, this happened after Albert had returned from a party at 2 o'clock Sunday morning and went to bed. But yeah, they did such a bad job because detectives at the scene noticed that the burglar had left very little evidence of breaking in. Like it just didn't seem like almost anyone like broke in. And also like Ruth, the way that she was acting was just not really how a terrorized wife witnessing her husband being killed would act. I also read that Judd at one point like tied her up and like put her in a room to make it look more convincing.
Oh.
But I mean, I don't really know, because she told police that like all this jewelry was stolen, but then they found it like under the mattress.
So they truly hid it in the house. That, of course, did she not realize that they were going to investigate the house?
Stupid, stupid. And then a breakthrough came in the case when a breakthrough came in the case when a detective found a pin with the letters JG on it and asked Ruth about it, which they have their initials in this house because apparently that was the initials of Albert's late fiance. But police didn't know that. So they brought it to her. They thought the pin was like dropped by the murderer and they matched.
Gotta get some info.
Yeah. And so they went through her address book, which I'm also like, girl, you gotta not keep paper receipts. Like you don't put anything in writing.
Like when you put your affair lover's address in the book.
Right. Like you don't do that. And so they asked her, they were like, oh, what about Judd Gray? And Ruth, she was like, oh, has he confessed?
No, girl.
And the police were like, oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. He confessed, told us everything when he hadn't said anything.
And he wasn't even caught yet.
Nope. And so they, arrested them both. And also he flipped on her pretty quick. He even said that Ruth had made several botched attempts to kill Albert, which I'm like, this is why you don't like coerce someone into doing a murder with you. Like you got to trust them.
And it's like, you got to know who you're getting into bed with as your affair. Cause like, they're fun for that, but are they going to blindly go to prison for you?
I mean, they have to be ride or die. Like this man just seemed like he was like,
He was ride share. He was like, oh, was on the left share. Is good. On the left is good. Just drop me off in Syracuse, New York, please.
Yes, which is where he was found when the police went looking for him. He said he'd been there all night, but that was not true. Like a friend of his had set up his room at a hotel to like make it seem like he had an alibi and he was there, but he wasn't. And he kind of just spilled all the beans basically the second he was brought back to Queens when he was charged.
They really did not take too long to get through that. But like Sarah was saying,
he also like went to all the tabloids and started like talking shit about Ruth, which we'll get to in a bit. But like, yes. I mean, this guy was truly singing like a canary.
Oh, on key. Yeah.
Disloyal. Disloyal.
Very much so. So because like, of course, the nature of this crime, it was an immediate media sensation because it was like, picture perfect family, ruined by affair and murder, all that stuff.
But what's weird was that like they weren't famous people. They were not politicians. They were just regular people. But for some reason, it just became this media sensation.
It was kind of, I feel like, one of those first times like the tabloid industry was starting out.
Yes.
Where people would just be like, New York woman and everything like that. So
totally.
It was fairly new, but also very much booming, the tabloid industry. Newspapers just cared about getting readers and not so much about facts. They were like, what is the five words we can shout? Has anything changed? What are the five words that we can put in a headline that will make people sucked in? So they would report on the most like minuscule, not important details to sell papers Even make stuff up.
This is, again, one of those cases I'm really liking going back in time because it's kind of comforting because I'm like, oh, not much has really changed. Truly.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Exactly. And it is like, so, we're not really, nothing that we're going through is particularly like unique, I feel like.
And I also feel like all of this is really fascinating to unpack from a true crime standpoint because it's like, when did true crime coverage even begin? And I was from things like tabloids and stuff like that, that were just getting all these details. Tabloids kind of took it and ran with it a little too far and too wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not new.
And so at this time, like, still, obviously, so many media organizations feud with one another, try to get the best scoop, everything like that. The Daily News and the Daily Mirror were, like, feuding with this story, trying to be like, who is, like, because there are some sites or publications that, like, oh, they are covering X, Y, Z story like a hawk. They're now the experts.
Yeah, and the Daily News was pretty new at the time, and they were basically, I mean, them and the Mirror were just trying to sell the most papers and really just try to one-up each other.
Oh, mm-hmm. And, like, the Daily News would also run polls whether they thought they deserved clemency, and apparently the majority of the readers' opinions favored that, but the paper only ran one pro-clemency letter in each article, and they kind of, like, buried it.
Which just also feels super... it just feels so relevant, like, the majority of the readers wanted one thing, but they're like, well, we don't like that. And we're just going to go with like the most outlandish thing and promote it.
And what they promoted was the pro-execution letters, prominently featured in bold type at the top.
Yeah. Not like the show.
not like our girl from now, White Lotus.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the Daily Mirror actually called for abolishing capital punishment in its editorial, but ran article after article attacking Ruth and Judd. So like, kind of having their cake and eating it too and getting sales. Yeah.
Make it make sense. They're just like, oh, we want to abolish capital punishment, but like not for these people.
Exactly. So execute her became like literally a cultural narrative and sensation. It's kind of like, but her emails, it's like the execute her of the time. Literally.
Honestly. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. Like it was just almost a rallying cry.
And Ruth started getting nicknames in the press, like we already talked about Ruthless Ruth, Bloody Blonde, and the Marble Woman. The latter because she seemed hard and stoic and didn't conform to traditional ideas of what a woman was. The former because Judd claimed she seduced him. So that's kind of the thing.
Yeah, it was so interesting because like the media didn't know what to like make of her. Like she was either this like femme fatale or this like stoic lady. And they really didn't know what to do.
They were like, oh, she's not a woman, but she used her woman's like power to captivate and hypnotize this New Jersey brassiere man. Yeah.
That's actually exactly what he told the tabloids.
Yes! Literally. So she was Ruthless Ruth, the Viking ice matron of Queens Village.
Honestly, Gray literally said,
what a name. I hope that's like a garage band somewhere.
Viking ice matron. I love it.
Like Sarah was saying, Gray told the tabloids, she would place her face an inch from mine and look deeply into my eyes until I was hers completely. While she hypnotized my mind with her eyes, she would gain control over my body by slapping my cheeks with the palms of her hand.
Shut up, man. Like, what? You did this.
What legal team is advising this? I'm like, sir, huh?
Seriously. I'm like... Again, shut up.
how are you, wait, you're going hypnotism?
Right. That's your defense.
Yeah. By morning, all the New York dailies carried photographs of the illicit lovers and like the text of their confessions of murder. The papers were like also very happy at this time to have another big case to replace what was going on then. It's like the Hall Mills affairs was like a reported murder trial that just ended in their column. So it kind of was like literally at the end of Chicago when they were like, oh, we have a new story on top. Like, let's forget about you and move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
The lovers, like we were saying, literally turned on each other so fast. Like, they were like, no, we conspired together, but they are the murderer.
Yeah, like literally just like the Spider-Man pointing fingers meme.
Yeah.
Of like, who actually did it?
And because claiming he was hypnotized wasn't going to get him off free. The next defense was kind of like with the suggestion of his shocked wife. Okay, she's riding with him. She's like, he must be insane. So like for alienist.
What is an like alienist? Kind of like, that's like, remember the tramp machinist?
Oh, wait, truly. We are getting into very interesting career paths.
What is an alienist?
It is the former term of a psychiatrist.
Wow.
And a psychiatrist.
That's problematic. Okay.
It's a psychiatrist who assesses the competence of a defendant in a court of law.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going interesting.
Problematic name, but interesting.
Very much so. So they tapped Gray's spinal fluid, x-rayed his head, and interviewed him for days. But they were like, he's not insane.
He could have. It's like, damn, man, you didn't act any better, you know?
I know. Like, it's kind of like a 30 Rock when Tina Fey was like dressed as Princess Leia for jury duty. I don't think it's fair for me to be on the jury because I read minds and they're like, lady, it's New York.
Exactly. They're like, no.
Well, that's what the spokesperson for the group, Dr. Sylvester Leahy, was like, he seems like a fine, cultured fellow and very affable.
He went to get declared legally insane, but then instead they're complimenting him.
They're like, I'd get a beer with him.
Right.
Of course, though, people between the two were more Team Henry than Team Ruth because
sexism.
Gestures at sexism and misogyny in the 1920s of it all.
That's it.
And present day. The trial was an event. Sarah, do you want to jump into that?
Yes, it truly was like a sensation. There were like thousands of people. I mean, I think like 1,500 to 2,000 people in the courthouse. And among them were some big names like Irving Berlin, the composer, a big filmmaker at the time, D.W. Griffith, and the producers of a little play called Chicago.
What would you think?
Yes, he had it coming. Well, they had it coming for sure. And Henry and Ruth were actually tried together, and they had an all-male jury. So
it's like that Chainsmoker song, if we go down, then we go down together. Facts. I don't even like that song, but it does carry on.
Right? It was written about them. Fun fact. So Ruth was tried before an all-male jury, which, like, not surprisingly, didn't go great for her. Although, like, it did go great for other people, like Lizzie Borden and, that's like, the true. Nolan sisters. So, unfortunately, sexism was not on her side this time. So Ruth like tried to tell her story on the stand, which I'm like, what would that story be? You know what I mean?
Like, girl, how are you going to save yourself out of this one?
Exactly. Like, give us the best you got, but also like, what is the best that you've got? Because you clearly like planned this murder. But that didn't even work because she, you know, on the stand, you have to answer in yes or no questions and you can't like explain.
There's no yes-anding.
Yeah, she was trying to yes and they were like, no, but. Just they were like, no. And one paper even said that she lied like a dog to save her own cheap hide.
Ooh.
I mean, yeah, lady, I'm just like, I don't know what.
I don't know how we can help you
here. I don't know how you're going to spin this again. So there were even things that she like never got a chance to say. So she wrote out her story for the Mirror, which was just basically this like clusterfuck of memories and rage and religious platitudes and grief. And so, I mean, even that, even when it came time to telling her story, she didn't really like plead her case very well. It seems like
not really.
So they were both convicted and sentenced to death in an hour and 45 minutes, which beats Alex Murdaugh's time.
Wow, true.
So rough.
That's when you know.
Rough for them. And they both tried to appeal. They lost. They even asked the governor of New York for clemency, which he was like, no.
Because also it's like there's so much media sensation about this. He's like, I'm not giving up.
I mean, you got to try. You got to respect them for trying, but I'm not surprised that the governor was like, absolutely not. So Ruth was sent to Sing Sing on January 12th, 1928. And she became the first woman to be executed there in like 30-ish years since Martha Place in 1899. Hmm. And she was sent to the electric chair 10 minutes before Judd. And the execution was at first going to be open to the public, but then it was like, again, such a circus at the last minute. They changed it so only a small number of journalists and people like that went. Also because I think like there were, as much as like the papers were clamoring for her to be executed, there were like sort of groups of like legal experts who didn't really like how it had become a whole spectacle. And they were like petitioning, I think, the like corrections facility or some, or like corrections board or some group like that to basically stop making it into a spectacle. Mm-hmm. So they like locked it down a bit. But one photographer snuck a camera onto his shoe into the hearing or the execution. And at the moment Ruth was executed, he like snapped a pic, which he sold to the Daily News, and the paper sold out in like 15 minutes. And honestly, this picture is like horrible, like morbid.
It was awful. Yeah. And also I'm like,
and they ran with it on the back cover, then? Of course.
How do you sneak a camera in back then too?
I don't know. I know. I'm like, weren't cameras like huge?
25 pounds. I know, it was the front cover, which like, I feel like would never happen. I mean, it's insane.
No, it's like super morbid and gross. And we could talk about that too. Cause I feel like honestly, I mean this, well, the spectacle around executions was like a thing of that time. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, I don't even think that they needed to necessarily be executed either, because
no, because I just have them serve time, like it's,
yeah, know, just life like, in prison.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was kind of what happened with that case. And then, in case you're wondering, like, wait, what about her daughter? Well, honestly, you have a better memory than me because I completely forgot
that she had
a daughter.
I know.
Because it really kind of just went left, but. That was the other thing too. I'm like, wait, lady, she did not like think this through at all.
No.
Like, you have a kid. So family members were really not sure what to do because her daughter was 9 at the time of the murder. So Albert's brother Warren petitioned to be allowed to appoint a legal guardian who was not a member of Ruth's family. Meanwhile, Ruth's mom, Josephine, also petitioned for custody. She was formally placed by her maternal grandmother, so I guess that's Josephine, in the Catholic institution? What?
Oh, I know. I was like, what does that mean?
Petition for custody to throw her in an institution.
I think it was like, I don't know if the petition, because it gets murky here. I'm not sure if that's where she was while they were debating the petition, I hope, because that's what I was so confused about. I was like, what the hell?
That's so weird. So Lorraine never visited her mother in prison, per her mom's request, which whatever. And then on September 7th, 1927, Josephine got guardianship. And during this whole time, there were, of course, disputes with the insurance company Ruth had used to insure her husband's life. One policy did pay out without contest, and that was worth $30,000 US. Then they filed suit to void two other policies, the insurance companies. Because, you know, one thing insurance companies are going to do is avoid paying you.
Oh, yes. I'm literally watching Bad Sisters right now on Apple TV. And it's like,
yes, so much fun. I've heard that's so good. That's okay. That's the thing where I'm like, obviously, yes, she did commit a murder. However, she took out this policy with this express line and he died an accidental violent death. And so therefore, I'm like, This is exactly what the policy was for.
That, okay, you know. And also, especially because, like, for the daughter.
Right. Right, it's not going to her. So one of the policies that the insurance company wanted to avoid paying was worth $45,000, and another one was $5,000. Combined, the three policies are worth a little over $1.25 million in today's money. That was actually 2021 money, but now we got to adjust even more for inflation. So it's probably
true, literally.
By May 1928, the insurance company made $4,000 available for Lorraine, which, all right, thank you, insurance. And then in November 1928, a ruling in the case was reached, and it was basically decided that the policies couldn't be collected because they were issued fraudulently, which is fair. Which is totally fair. Because she also kind of tricked him into these policies.
And also had a scammy guy helping her out with it.
Yes. A fraudster, forger, insurance agent. And so at the time of the judgment, the lawyer acting on behalf of Ruth's family asked the court to allow them to appeal without a printed record, basically because the family was super poor and they couldn't even sell their house because of how notorious the case had become. Ugh. But unfortunately, by May 1930, it was ruled on appeal that their two policies were invalid. So she did all of this. She was literally executed. The money didn't even pay out. All for nothing. Like, literally horrible.
It's so horrible, all start to finish. And, like, that's the thing, too, where it's, like, the poor ripple effects from this case for her fam. Which, obviously.
Horrible. So that goes to show you, don't do this.
The TLDR of this story, don't. Divorce. Divorce lawyers exist for a reason.
Divorce. Well, first of all, these people never should have gotten married in the first place. Like, that's, they really didn't even seem like they liked each other.
That's actually very, very true. So don't marry someone just because you think you should. Because you should.
Yeah. Definitely don't do that. Don't plan murder for the life insurance.
And yeah, so we have a lot of don'ts in this story, but I guess the only do is that I do hope you all rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. 5 stars. I hope you guys enjoy it. And also, like we said, we're doing so many older cases. Keep us posted if there's any from back then that you're like, oh, you guys should really cover this.
Yes, definitely let us know. Other than that, we'll keep you guys updated on any true crime happenings. So stay tuned for that, or just follow us on Instagram if you need the coverage in real time at Not Another True Crime.
You can follow me at Kasmer Danny, Kasmer with K.
You can follow me at Sarah Lameen. And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Levine and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Levine. Be sure to follow at NATCPod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to natc@betches.com. Betches.